I do not think.
So what are you getting at?
Even listen to yourself when you talk.
Hey, we're live! Woohoo!
Turn off your radio before it's too late!
Hated it.
I told you this was a bad idea.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, Danny, well, it seems that you're very fond of Isaiah Thomas, and it seems that your family's very fond of Isaiah Thomas. What he said publicly over all these months, did that hurt you at all, personally?
Not at all. Like I said, I didn't expect return attacks. I expected him to be hurt, knowing him and his passion and what he gave to us and so forth. And it was a very challenging time for me too. I wasn't out trying to trade Isaiah Thomas, but I did try to acquire Kyrie, and there was a price to pay. And I'd do it again if I had to, but it's still not easy.
Hey, Felger, Maz, hey, thanks for having me on. First time, long time. Listen, I totally agree with Maz here. That was a great win last night by the Seas, but, you know, I was watching the second and third quarter. LeBron, he could have taken over. He could have, he did turn on his game. He didn't take over the game, and I think in the playoffs he definitely will. And
this just surprised. Okay, I mean, fair enough. I mean, that's the history. It just surprises me. You know, again, Van Gundy last night, the end of the game, Cleveland, clear-cut favorite, clear-cut over the Celtics. Jimmy Stewart, how do you feel?
I'm worried about stopping LeBron when he's motivated in the playoffs. So I thought Marcus Morris was going to do that, and he didn't show me anything last night.
He sucked in that game. He might have been the only Celtic that really sucked.
Yeah, he did. It's true. The thing is, though, I don't think that's the issue for Cleveland. I think it's about Isaiah. If Isaiah comes back and is 90% of what Kyrie was for LeBron last year, and they emerge as the most talented team because of it, then LeBron's in it. And if Isaiah doesn't, if this is LeBron's crew, even with Thompson coming back, that's not gonna. If this is LeBron's team, he's gonna check out, man. He's gonna check out because the Cavaliers is currently constituted. I don't think are as good as the Celtics team.
So he might check out. He might. I mean, I don't rule that part of it out. But if it's about Isaiah, then how can you draw any sort of conclusion from last night's game?
Well, that's fair. I guess that's fair.
I'm convinced they're dealing Isaiah and they're getting a big before that. So I think you're going to see a different Cleveland team come the playoffs.
You're still on the DeAndre Jordan thing.
It might not be him, but I think they're trading Tristan Thompson. I think they're trading Isaiah.
I just love how Jimmy hates Isaiah so much. And not only are you training him from the Celtics, he's training him from the Cavs.
He deserves it.
Martin on the Cape. Go ahead, Martin.
It looked like to me when Kevin Love went out, the Cavs didn't seem to try. And when LeBron sat down, Kyrie sat down soon after. I don't put much stock into that game last night. Maybe we'll get a better sample February 11th. But the last of the Bridges, Marcus Smart, has got to go. Give me Terry Rozier anytime versus any opponent. He's a drag. Marcus Smart is a drag on the team because when he doofs out, he breaks the hustle and flow and momentum that propels the team. I'm aware of what he brings into the game and that he just won that Houston game for you. But any big plays he makes are to make up for the idiotic things that he did and shots missed earlier in the game. Well, he's thrown the ball into the front rows, Mike, more than oil can boy on a twister.
Okay, Martin. There's a school of thought that says the reason, and the numbers bear it out, the worse he shoots, the more they win. The worse he shoots, the better is plus minus. Like, these are stats. These are facts, not opinions. And so why is that? And we said we can't figure it out. The paradox, the Marcus Smart paradox. What is it? And Perillo said it, and I guess it's maybe the answer. That when he's shooting so poorly, he feels compelled to make up for it. Because he's killing you offensively. He's like, well, now I got to go down and dive for that ball. And now I got to go get that loose ball. I got to go take that dive. I got to draw that foul because I cost you 8 points on the other in the offensive end because I can't put it in the ocean. And maybe that's it. Last night he hit, and he's the one who gave you the lead. He was hitting early in that game, and that's how you... Cleveland came to win that game, Mass. Cleveland came in, and LeBron came in to win that game. And because you got hot early, too, you went toe-to-toe with LeBron early, and then Marcus Smart made shots, and Rozier made shots, and then Cleveland shut it down. But Smart was one of the reasons you won that game last night.
Yeah, so look, I looked this up, and again, you might have been gone at the time. In the last 21 games, he's shooting 36% from three-point land. It was up over 40 until not too long ago.
That's better.
I mean, Smart's really, the numbers have gone up a lot. He's over 30% for the year now. Not that that's anything to sneeze about. So me, I mean, Perillo's theory is a sound theory, but what I think, to make shots, to really make shots, It's work for him. It takes more effort. He's got to focus on his mechanics. He's got to focus on, you know, his mindset, all of it. And he can't do all of it at once because he's just not good enough.
Smarter Rozier.
Right now, honestly, it's as close as it's ever been, I think. And the reason is that Rozier's a better offensive player. I mean, it's not even debatable. And Rozier gives you some intangibles and effort on defense, too. But I like Smart's makeup, and I like the body. I like the bigger, stronger body.
I go Smart there. I'm still Smart.
It's close.
Steven Bridgewater.
They're not keeping both, I'll tell you that.
No, they're not. For sure not. Hi, Steve. Oh, okay. He had to jump. Here's Pete in Essex. Hi, Peter.
Hey, if Marcus Morris was brought in to defend LeBron, that's fine. But we're not a complete team yet either, right? If Jimmy Stewart can help me out, did we not get money for Gordon Hayward getting injured?
Yes, they haven't used it yet.
Do we have like $8 million to spend? And if so, do you have anybody specifically that you're looking at, Jimmy, that may be released that we could pick up that would change the dynamics of the Celtics and Cavs going
Derek
forward?
Favors is the potential name, but he needs to be bought out by Utah, and you could outbid any team on him.
Do you think that would make a difference?
Yes, because it would give them somebody who can rebound the basketball and make free throws and be defensive at the end of the game.
Stupid question. Can you trade that exception like you can others?
I think that time has passed because you would have needed to acquire the player already.
I think they missed it. I think Jimmy's right.
I think Celtics as is. I think Celtics as is. Cleveland as is. They're right there. It's 1-1A. They're right there. And if you're home court, you win that series. And I think everyone's just sort of sleeping on it. Now, if Isaiah comes back and is a real factor, then that changes things. But I think these teams have drawn even to the point where where's Game 7? That's who's going to win that series. And Boston's now 4.5. They're back to being 4.5 ahead of Cleveland. They've widened the gap again. Cleveland went, they drew even. And now they're back to 4.5, and they just curb-stomped them. And I just don't know how you can't look at that and say, well, this is... I mean, it was just looking past nationally. I watched Kellerman and Stephen A. Ward. They were doing it this morning. Like, about LeBron in the finals. LeBron in the final. Like, totally dismissing the Celtics. Like, there's even a consideration here in the East.
So you put emphasis on regular season, then?
Some, yes. Definitely. Yes. I do. Because I invest in these games, so I'm going to put some weight into them. And I think it does. I do think you establish things over the regular season. But most importantly is home court. Maz and our email exchange this morning. This is funny. Do you notice this, too, guys, that one of his emails trailed off?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I must not have finished it.
It cut off. And this is because this is sort of going counter to what you're giving me today. But anyway, in the email exchange, you said the Cavs are still ripe for the picking.
They are.
All of their issues aren't gone. That team has a
ticker problem,
and then a cutout.
Yeah, they got some core issues there that are centered around LeBron. And again, you got the owner going to the player, wanting to know if he's going to stay. He won't stay. He won't commit. That creates this level of uncertainty and doubt in everybody. Where's this thing going? What are we doing? So that's all still there. That's not going away. But if Isaiah comes back and plays well in the play, again, the point that we started today.
See, I think this Isaiah Thomas is the key to this whole thing.
So the point we started today with was, do you extrapolate anything from that game last night and apply it to the postseason? No. My answer is no. Yours is yes. Congratulations.
Yes.
Yeah, I think there's things you can take from that game. Another one being, and a couple of callers ago, the guy mentioned Kevin Love. Last night, to me, was the microcosm of Kevin Love and why I've always ragged on that guy. He is a gutless puke.
Oh, what a...
And not even besides checking himself out of the game with the little ankle injury, and it was perfect for anyone watching on NBC Sports Boston at the time. Mike Gorman goes, well, Kevin Love won't be coming back in the game. And Tommy goes, who? Like, with such disdain in his voice. But if you remember, if you watch the whole game, third quarter, there was a point where Love does this, like, fruity little shot right outside the key. He's hoping for a call. He doesn't go back on defense.
Oh, the left-handed shot.
Yeah.
Yes, we airballed from right underneath the basket. Yes.
There's no defense, and Jason Tatum nails a three. Like, he didn't even go back. I can't stand that guy. And Jimmy, have you heard anything about him getting moved to OKC for maybe Melo? Because a game like that has to frustrate the hell out of LeBron James from Kevin.
I haven't, but I'll check around.
But the whole cast, Jay Crowder.
Oh, another hack.
Jay Crowder. Oh, he's so much more pleasant for me to watch in another uniform. What were you people looking at the last couple? Why were you blowing smoke up my butt for years about Jay Crowder?
Because Brad Stevens put him in a position to be successful.
Ugh. Please. No, we overrate our players here, is the answer.
Oh, I know, but we can celebrate Al Horford being a tough guy. Don't you call him the magician, Murray? Isn't that what you call him? He's a guy you can rely on in the playoffs, huh? How many times has his team's beaten LeBron now? What are they, like 2-18?
I don't
or something
that
like that
anymore because I host the Celtics show with Chris Gethard. noon at Saturday.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
No one says it like they do. Like they do.
So my question to the people of Boston is, what are you nuts?
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
So what's the likelihood, Adam, from a Patriots perspective, that they could lose both McDaniels and Patricia to head coaching jobs?
Randy, there have been other teams in other years that have taken a look at both Patriots coordinators, Patricia McDaniels, who have decided at various points that they were not ready to leave the nest in New England. But this year, it looks as if both men are poised to leave. Both men are poised to get head coaching jobs. They seem to be two of the most coveted coaching candidates out there. Both are in line to get head coaching jobs. When teams spoke to Matt Patricia last year, the one thing they said was that he was smart enough to be the GM of a football team. And I think this year he's going to get his opportunity as a head coach. And I think this year Josh McDaniels is going to get an opportunity as a head coach. And New England could be without both coordinators as it heads into the 2018 season. Now, keep in mind the NFL rules. You are not allowed to officially hire a coach until after that team season is done. But the rules have been changed this year to where a team can enter into an agreement with a coach. And so Josh McDaniels and Matt Patricia could have an agreement to become a head coach in the next week or so while New England is still alive in the playoffs. It's just that their hiring could not be officially announced and there could not be a press conference about it until after that coach's season is done.
Basically, I mean, that was the tonality there, that they're gone. Which, I don't think the story is the Patriots losing the coordinators. Like, so it'll be Chad O'Shea, who's the receiver coach, and Brian Flores will be the defensive coordinator. And I've said this many times, I'll say it again. We won't even notice it on offense. You won't even notice it. You won't notice it. Did you notice when it went from Josh to Bill O'Brien? Other than Bill O'Brien would yell at Brady on the sidelines?
No, I felt like they went through some transitional change that year, but maybe it was more, look, I don't remember the particulars. I just remember at the time, maybe it was the play calling, that I felt like O'Brien wasn't calling plays that McDaniels would have. I remember a transition there, but not anything that was, you know, that damaged him for the season or anything like that. I mean, that's my recollection, but, you know, again, so if you ask me for particulars, I can't give them to you.
O'Brien was the coordinator during that sort of era, that weird era where they got thumped in 09, and that was maybe the worst year they've had, you know, in terms of culture in the locker room. 2010, they lost that divisional game to the Jets at home. They squeaked into the Super Bowl in 11, but weren't a great team. Like, so that was sort of the run for Bill O'Brien. So Bill O'Brien's tenure here coincided with a, not by Patriots standards, not very successful period. But in my mind's eye, like, I don't remember the offense looking different or feeling. Did they run more? Did they throw fewer screens? Like, I'd have to go back and search it out. But did you feel like the team was any different?
No. No.
So, look, they went from Charles,
because it's about Bill.
And Brady. They went from Charlie Weiss to Josh McDaniels to Bill O'Brien to Josh McDaniels. And I'm telling you, it's 18 years now, and it's been roughly the same. I mean, don't you feel that way?
Absolutely.
And I think the next guy is going to be roughly the same. The game plan is forged between Brady and Belichick on a Tuesday. Now, I don't know. With all the weirdness this year, maybe that's changed. I don't know. But historically, Bill and Brady come up with the game plan with their Tuesday meeting, and then, you know, everything sort of flows from there. And as long as those two are still working together in a good relationship, which, again, maybe is a question. But assuming they are, not much is going to change.
I think there's nervousness on behalf of Patriots fans of losing these two because they're household names at this point. It's just based on the popularity of the team because we're always talking about them. Otherwise, you're not going to notice a difference.
And I think, you know, I think Patricia or whoever has done a hell of a job on defense, because you look at some of the personnel and it's like, who's this guy? And they're sixth in the league in points allowed. So whether it's Patricia or Belichick or Flores or whatever they're doing there, like, someone deserves a lot of credit. And it should be Patricia, if we're being fair. So he's good, but I don't know. I just, is Belichick here? I don't know. I just don't feel you're going to miss those guys. You know what I think the story is? What interests me is that, all right, so let's say McDaniels and Patricia go, which Schefter seemed to indicate, that both those guys are gone. What if one of them takes Nick Caserio with him? Or Caserio goes somewhere? All right? Now Bill he's 65 years old. Now he's got to start over on offense, start over on defense, groom two positional coaches to be coordinators. He's got to bring a new guy in to head the personnel department.
And he lost his quarterback of the future.
And he has to go out and draft the next Jimmy Garoppolo. Now he's got to go back into the draft and find the next needle in the haystack and try and piece this together from Brady to the future. That's an awful lot on your plate at 65 years old. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, that's sort of a pain in the ass if I'm Bill. Like, no, I do that with my first job. Or, you know, when I'm just starting a program, right? I got to hire coordinators. I got to hire a personnel guy. I got to go find my quarterback. Like, I'm 65 and I'm in the middle of this whole thing and it's all set up and now I got to restart everything. Like, I'm not saying that, I mean, I don't think he's walking away, but if he would, that would be a reason, don't you think?
Yes, of course, yes. And on that list, I'm sorry, I put the quarterback first, because I think he can endure the change in coordinators. He's got guys on his staff that he's worked with anyway. He just has to give them a little more responsibility, and he still looks over their shoulders.
So I'd start
the quarterback?
The quarterback, too, but it's also, you know, if it were just Josh and everybody else stayed, nothing. If it were just Patricia and everybody else stayed, big deal. You're grooming. He's got to do offense, defense, personnel department all at once.
And a quarterback isn't just about the draft. It's about drafting, identifying the right guy, drafting him, and then developing
and
him.
And then the quarterback thing, Maz, I think you're right. It's maybe more work than any of it.
Like, that's a process. Like, you're going to bring in a guy and have him ready in, what, 8 weeks to replace Brady? And I'm not saying that they need the 8 weeks.
No.
But it's going to take a couple of years.
Right, no, you got to do that. You got to reset the whole Garoppolo thing. They hit a home, it feels like, they hit a home run with Garoppolo. Drafted the right guy, invested all that time, all that energy, all that manpower, and now they got to go do it again? That was a 3.5-year process. Now they got to do that again on top of bring along a new OC, a new defensive coordinator, a new personnel guy. Like, that's a lot. That's a lot. And at 65, for Bill, like...
It sounds to me like you might be fence-sitting a little bit. Do you feel like I think there's a part of you deep down feels like he could walk this offseason.
Definitely not. Nope, I'm not saying that. I don't feel that way.
I don't rule it out.
I think I would. I just don't feel like we're getting that sort of thing. We're not. But it's like, I don't know if it... I mean, I'm just telling you, that's a lot on your plate for a guy who should be at the end, not at the beginning. To have to reset the whole thing at this stage of the game is a lot. And so, I mean, that's just my thought on the coordinators and, you know, and what we have there. Do you know it was 18 years ago that Bill Belichick resigned from
here? I saw that. You said that in the email this morning.
18 years ago today.
Just something else that makes me feel like I'm ancient.
So,
greatest thing that ever happened to the Patriots.
Vinny Crouch there at NBC Sports Boston has put this up on our simulcast. Did you just do this, Vinny, or is that the actual one?
No, I think he just did that.
Oh, the handwriting is way too like...
It was a creation.
It's a Vinny-ish.
I remember hating it at the time because I wanted Dom Capers. Didn't they set an interview for Dom Capers? I remember thinking, that's the guy that got the Panthers to the champion, almost to the Super Bowl in his second year. Oh, he's a stud. That's the coach of the Pats. Dom Capers. No.
Quite a thing.
Oh, it was unbelievable. Please, the whole thing was with like, you want to talk about NBA type of drama and politics? That's what was going on between the Jets, Parcells, the Patriots, Kraft, Belichick, all of it. It was all one big power play.
So he resigned that day, but again, it took, I don't know, a month, you know, weeks to a month for him to get here. He had to get out of his contract. He fought his contract. At first, he and Jeffrey Kessler took on the league. They lost. And
again.
Again, right? The great Jeffrey Kessler lost again. And, so it took a while after that, and when he first did this, I remember I was in the trenches there reporting this stuff. There was still Will McDonough, the chief among them, dismissed Belichick to the Patriots. Like, that's not happening. It's not happening because McDonough knew what was going on there in New York, that Bill couldn't break the contract, that he had committed to being the next head coach. He couldn't go anywhere else without compensation, and McDonough knew that the Jets were never going to let him go, and so he wasn't going anywhere. And so a lot of people said, well, so Bill quit, big deal. He's not coming here. And you didn't even want him. Like, most people didn't want him.
I know I didn't.
So
I wanted him after those three championships in Cleveland, I knew.
So not many people wanted him. Really didn't. Most of the guys here, you know, Kevin Mannix was dead set against him at the time.
Duplicitous pawn scum, he called him.
Duplicitous pawn scum. Michael Holly was dead set against him at the time. Holly had covered the Browns and knew all of Bill's draft history in Cleveland, wrote a pretty scathing article about Bill and his drafting history, didn't want him. Didn't Ted Sarandis go nuts not wanting Bill Belichick?
Oh, yeah.
Sounds about right.
So all these guys were lined up against Bill, and when he resigned, it wasn't like people even wanted him here. But behind the scenes, that's what was going on. And that's, you know, and so the Patriots were trying to wait for Bill to get out of the contract so they didn't have to give up compensation. So Bill fought to get out of the contract, lost. He and Kessler lost. And that's why you had to give up the first round pick. That's why you give up the first round pick for Bill Belichick.
I don't understand why Kraft would want this guy. He sucked in Cleveland. He'll suck here.
What was the ultimate package? How many picks? Just one?
I think it was just the one, wasn't it? Which I think ended up being Sean Ellis. We're going to play something here where they go back through it. The Jets had four first-round picks the next year. I think they traded Keyshawn. They got the Bill pick, and they had their own. I think they had four first-round picks the next year as a result of it. And Sean Ellis, and then they traded all around those players, all those picks. But Sean Ellis is the guy that they attached to the Belichick pick, I think. And you'll hear, we'll play something coming back to, you know, to sort of bring you back there. So there's your football thought of the day. We actually have a few more as we go forward.
Felger and Maz.
This is Felger.
The man is beholden to no one.
And Maz.
I don't really know what to expect.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Due to the various uncertainties surrounding my position as it relates to the team's new ownership, I've decided to resign as the head coach of the New York Jets.
24 hours. You don't even run a practice. You don't even look your quarterback in the eyes in 24 hours, and you resign by writing, "I resign as head coach," on a napkin? That's the team I root for. The coaches finish dinner and decide they're going to resign as head coach, and they write it on a napkin and submit it, and that was the end of the Jets-Belichick era.
My reaction was, we don't even mean enough to him to actually write out the words. It would have taken too much effort and energy to actually put in the EAD in head and the OACH in coach. And worst of all, the OORKETS.
So 18 years ago today, that happened. We can weigh in on that. The coaching stuff, all the Celtics stuff on the board. Here's Albert in Braintree, in fact, on Josh McDaniels. Go ahead, Albert.
Hey, gentlemen. So if McDaniels leaves, takes another job, doesn't that mean that Bill is going to be around for the long haul? You got to think that McDaniels knows. Bill has a few years. If he has five plus more years, so I would think that if McDaniels is going to leave, that you know he's going to be the replacement.
Agreed. I agree, and that's why you asked me. Do I think Bill's leaving? No, I don't think he's leaving. He's got it too good. Or he's had it too good. But this year, it's shaping up as a pain in the ass sort of offseason for him. If both McDaniels and Patricia leave, and especially if Casario leaves in the personnel department, and he's got to go restart the clock on the Garoppolo thing and just sort of redo that whole thing he just spent 4 years developing, that is a lot on the plate of a 65-year-old head coach who's been coaching in the league since 1976, more than any other guy in the sport. Like, that's just a lot to reset there for an older guy.
And how many young guys can he count on from last year's draft class?
Right, exactly. It's not like he's got a talented young team. He's got a talented team, but it's not. He doesn't got a lot of youth. So I think that's all sort of fair. Like, I don't think it's if.
So what if McDaniel stays? Can we surmise the opposite?
Yes.
That Bill's leaving soon?
Yes. Yeah, I attach the two. I do. I mean, it's not the only determining factor, but I think it's a tell. I do.
I'm surprised McDaniels is still here. I thought by now he'd be gone. So I have, you know, to me, that suggests that he knows Bill's kicking it soon and he's going to take over here.
Here's Andrew in New Hampshire on the Celts. Hi, Andrew.
Matt, are you freaking kidding me, man? I mean.
About what?
We beat every contending team in the NBA so far. You know, look, I'm not saying we're going to beat Cleveland in the playoffs, but you got to give these guys some credit, especially Terry Rozier. That guy's a different player from last year.
Okay, I do give him credit. They're better.
Yeah, but you're still doubting on him.
So wait a minute. You just said, I'm not saying we're going to beat Cleveland in the playoffs this year. What am I saying that's different than that?
I'm not saying that we're not. We could. We absolutely could.
Yeah, and I agree to that, too.
I'm telling you, you are. You are beating Cleveland in the playoffs as it stands right now.
Andrew, is it a tone thing with Maz? Because it is with me. It's a tone thing. Even when they accomplish a win like last night or even Golden State earlier in the year, it's, Maz, what do you think of that?
It's all right. Even though yesterday he says, I need to see him win by 15.
Yeah, and they won by 14. And it's
so
still,
this guy says, you got to be kidding me. I'm not saying they're going to beat Cleveland, but, well, that's exactly what I said. I said, I don't know if they're beating Cleveland, so what part do you disagree with?
The tone. Yeah, I think
it's exactly
a dismissive
like my tone.
Huh.
Tonality issue. But see, I think they are. I think they are beating Cleveland. I told you, those odds, just to win the East. I'm not stupid. I'm not getting to, you know, I'm not telling NBA final. You're not a championship team yet. But the Cavs are minus 182 to win the East. You're plus 260. I think there is great value there for the Celtics. If the Celtics are home, they're winning. Celtics are home, they're beating this Cleveland team. Here's Josiah in San Antonio. Yes, Josiah.
Yeah, this one is for Mass. I kind of wanted to piggyback off the last caller, but he beat me to it. Mass, yesterday you sat up here and said that the Celtics could benefit from that win yesterday, right?
I did.
Now, today, you sent a different song. You saying now that they got a chance of beating Cleveland. It's all over the place. So then when the playoffs come, if Cleveland beats the Celtics, then you'll say, oh, ha-ha, I told you so. You can't have it both ways.
Why can't I?
Because
it's his show. He gets to do it.
Yeah.
What?
It just doesn't work like that.
Sure, it does.
Secondly, Cleveland, the only advantage, even when IT comes back, is LeBron. And other than that, the Celtics have a better bench. Dwayne Wade, these dudes are washed up, and I just don't see why you keep shortchanging them and you just flip-flopping all over the place.
I'm not shortchanging anybody. I'm not flip-flopping anything. It was a good regular season win. It was a meaningful regular season win. It opened up a gap in the conference standings. You might get home court now in the playoffs. Come postseason, LeBron James is going to pants Jaylen Brown. He's going to pants him. Trust me on that. Nick in Brooklyn. Go ahead, Nick.
Hey, guys. First off, Felger, the Cavs were actually not favored last night. The Celts were favored by 3.
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about to win the East in Vegas.
Okay. I know you mentioned earlier the Cavs were favored. But in any event, I think you can't really talk about last night's game without bringing up the fact that the Cavs were on the second leg of back-to-backs, and it was their third game in 5 nights. And considering they have the oldest team in the league, and it's a game in January, I don't know that we can draw a whole lot from what went down last night, to Maz's point.
And
regarding the importance of home court in playoffs, it's also worth mentioning that prior to last year's NBA Finals, LeBron had actually won one road playoff game in 25 consecutive series. So I'm not sure that, you know, simply getting 4 games, if it even goes that far in Boston, would really tilt the balance.
So here's the difference, Nick. Last year it didn't matter. And in the last 6-7 years, it hasn't mattered who has home court against LeBron, because he's owned the East. He's owned your ass and everybody else's. It hasn't mattered. This year, in my opinion, is different. This year, if Cleveland doesn't get home court, they're not getting past us. The Celtics have caught him. I'm not telling you that the Celtics have surpassed him, but they've caught him. It's 1-1A. They're right there. And if LeBron doesn't give 100%, Cleveland's going to lose. If Cleveland doesn't have home court, they're going to lose. This is just my opinion. This is how I feel about it. And it's not just based on last night. It's based on the Celtics have beaten every good team they faced this year. Golden State, Houston, OKC, San Antonio, Cleveland. They've beaten every good team they've faced. And that's just where I'm at. And I think Vegas is behind the curve. I think the national commentators are behind the curve. I think Maz is behind the curve. I just think that's where it's at.
I've been behind the curve my whole life. I'm comfortable being behind the curve.
Marvin in Reading. Go ahead, Marvin.
Hey, I'm just calling 2 quick notes. I got you if you need that. And Paul Pierce literally just said himself, February 11th, he does not want to look up on the Jumbotron to see IT's video package.
Did he just say that? Your phone sucked and now you're not there.
And who said that? Pierce? When is he getting that?
He claims Pierce said it. I know if I were Pierce, I would feel that way.
Want to do a quick Google search there?
Yeah, give me a sec.
So apparently the piercing is after the game. So it's not even like a pregame thing. It's after the game. That's just, I was listening to this. This was Ainge today or Isaiah. Who said it? Whatever. It's after. It's after. So, like, their thought is, yeah, it's during a TV timeout in the first quarter, and then 3 hours later, here comes Pierce, and that there's plenty of room for both. That's Ainge's. And again, Ainge was on TNR this morning. You can hear that on 98.5 The Sports Hub, our app, or 98.5thesportshub.com.
Well, there probably is enough room for both. I mean, there's enough gap there if that's how they do it. I'm just saying, to me, if I were Pierce, that day's mine. You gave that day to me a long time ago. Now you're going to give it to Isaiah, too?
The one that blows me away the most is the Celtics. You don't have to say yes. You don't. The other team doesn't get to dictate what you put on your scoreboard. You get to dictate where and when you run things on your scoreboard. And just because Isaiah asked for you to say yes is, to me, insane. When you had a moment last night, you put him on the board last night during a timeout, everyone applauded. Like, it was just a dressed down version of what you're going to get. Like, why couldn't that have been it? Could have easily done it right there. You did it.
It should have been it.
I mean, so it's absurd that the team, to me, is giving in on that, especially when I think Isaiah's full of crap. His family wants to see it. He wants to be there. No. He's doing a reality show. And it's a much better reality show if he's playing and if he wins or if he goes off and has a good night. So then in that installment of the Book of Isaiah or whatever that hell he's doing there on the Players Tribune, then that episode goes into Boston, video tribute, family in the stands, 35 points, walks off a winner, camera crew everywhere. Much better show, much better installment of the Book of Isaiah than that thing last night. That's why he wants to do it. And the Celtics say, okay, Like, that's crazy.
Apparently, Pierce just said on that show, The Jump, with Rachel Nichols on ESPN, he doesn't want the Celtics to honor Isaiah Thomas on February 11th during his jersey retirement.
Ha! God bless him.
All right, good fantastic. For him.
God bless him. Good for Pierce. Good for Pierce. He should absolutely feel that way. He gave the franchise 100 times more than Isaiah did. And again, I liked Isaiah when he was here. But Pierce deserves his own day.
See, now the Celtics have a thing on their hands.
Good.
Now the Celtics have a little thing on their hands. Because now Paul's upset. God, the NBA, what a bunch of Sallies these guys are. With the drama. Oh, my God, you guys.
Murray, Paul Pierce is my favorite Celtic of all time.
Murray's right. They feel guilty. They feel guilty for trading him because they fed him a load of crap when he was here. Everybody bought in, most of all Isaiah. And then Kyrie popped up and they had to trade Isaiah and they felt bad. But the reality...
It's a business decision.
Of course it is.
But everyone's crying about the video. Like, no, I want it on this night. Okay, we'll give it to you on that night. And then the other guy says, well, I don't want to see it on that night. Well, what are we going to do now? Like, you deal with a bunch of six-year-olds. Like, good God, you roll the ball, play the game. And Pierce, go do your spot.
What number did Isaiah wear when he was here? Any idea? I don't remember. Was it three?
Four.
Maybe they can clear a spot right next to Bird's 33 and put the four right there. Because, I mean, that to me is something that, you know, I think those two I are on the same plane in my mind. Bird and Isaiah. Perfect.
So, just because we're on it. Here's Ainge, this one. Can we play Ainge? Jimmy, let's just go to 50 here since we're almost there. Here's Danny Ainge this morning on TNR. And again, you can hear the full interview on our 98.5 The Sports Hub app, 98.5thesportshub.com, on why he gave in to Isaiah in the first place.
Well, the next time they come into town is the day that you're honoring Paul Pierce. Do you still intend to do that? Do you don't think that takes anything away from Paul Pierce's event?
No, absolutely not. I mean, I think Paul said it best, you know, that, you know, he's going to be the appetizer, the main course, and the dessert. I thought that was pretty funny, but, you know, I think that it won't interfere with Paul, and Paul understands, and everybody understands. It'll be a great game, and it'll be a great moment, and Isaiah deserves it in our mind, and we all love Isaiah and are grateful for him and all that he's done for us as well, and obviously you can't compare the two, but Isaiah has been very gracious through this whole process. He hasn't made any demands. He just had one request, and we granted him that request.
Okay. So now Paul's upset. There's a whole lot of these guys. What a bunch of children.
And rightfully so.
No,
Paul Pierce has accomplished something here.
You know what?
Good.
Not rightfully so. So it's going to be, and look, I think Isaiah's ridiculous. The whole thing's ridiculous. But Isaiah's thing is going to take at most 3 minutes. I mean, the video's going to be 90 seconds, and then they're going to applaud for maybe a minute. So let's say at max, the thing's going to take 3 minutes, maybe 3 hours before Pierce is even in the building, or, you know, the Pierce thing is post-game. It's a Sunday afternoon game, right? It's a Sunday afternoon game. So Isaiah's thing is going to be the first TV timeout of the first quarter, right? That's usually when they do something like that. And then Pierce, 3 hours later, is going to be on the floor. And you're going to... I don't want to look up and see Isaiah. Pierce is a baby too. I'm sorry, baby.
Oh, I love it. He's sticking it to Isaiah.
Good for Pierce.
Why does Pierce have a problem? Why would Pierce have a problem with Isaiah?
Because it's his night. There's not an opener tonight.
Right.
We're the dead. We're not going to let some bum band open up for us tonight. We're going on. We're playing for 4 hours.
No, the headliner's LeBron. I'm sorry, both of you. I'm sorry, all of you. The headliner's...
Locally? No, he's not.
LeBron.
It's not a national... That's not a national thing. You know what? It's for Boston.
You want to talk about overrated all-time greats? I'll put Paul Pierce near the top of that list. One championship that he got carried by Garnett for his one championship.
He was the MVP of the finals.
Carried by Garnett. It was Garnett's team. It was Garnett's team. And you know it. Garnett came here and changed everything. So Garnett won him his one title. One title.
Still won more than Isaiah Thomas.
Agreed. I couldn't care less. He's won more than Isaiah Thomas. This is him saying, Isaiah, you should have had your video last night because I'm going to make him stop on the next one.
The whole lot of you.
Little twerp.
Divas. The whole thing.
Please, look who's talking.
So we've got, where's my video, damn it?
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub. This is Felger and Mass.
I'm a hypocrite.
Wow.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
That's one thing about Mother Nature. You can't control that. You can't run people over and get into work. I mean, so ain't nothing to really apologize on. I didn't try to be late. I mean, but that's basically it, though. I mean, I don't know really what to say. I mean, you leave home, you have people there, Carson in a row, you're sitting there, and what you do? It's not the Jetsons. I can't jump up and just fly. Hell, I'm supposed to do.
Shows up late, along with Randy Moss, Sean Springs, and I can't remember, Gary Guyton? Does that sound right? There's four of them that showed up late due to a snowstorm. And not egregiously late, but just came into an 8 o'clock meeting at like 8:15, and Bill sent them home. Bill sent them all home. And that was a Dale's. That was one of the indications that you knew a Dale's Thomas wasn't really long for this. When he shows up the next day and not, you know, doesn't just take his medicine, but sort of fights back. Says, I didn't know it was going to snow. There was traffic. I mean, you just heard it. I can't run people over getting to work. What do you do? It's not the Jetsons. I can't just jump up and fly. What the heck am I supposed to do? Dale's was gone a couple weeks later. But, you know, Bill did it again today. Told the guys no lateness, you know, for the bomb genesis or whatever, so they all showed up on time, apparently. They practice indoors, the Sallies. Not sure who are bigger Sallies, the Patriots for practicing indoors or Murray, who's been crying all day about having to drive into work today. You came in so bent out of shape.
Oh, I literally drove here with a clenched jaw.
Why?
Just because this sucks. I got here. I'm not going to bitch about the fact, but fine, still work. I guess we're essential, so I'm here, and I'm here to do the show because I get here and I do my job. But this still sucks, and I hate the fact I live here. If it wasn't for this job, I wouldn't live here.
It's snow.
Because winter blows.
It's snow.
Yeah, and it sucks, and it's an inconvenience. And I want to get out of my house and go in my car, have it start, and just get to work like I normally do.
Well, so today took a little bit longer. You know,
like an hour and a half. It takes like 30 minutes tops for me to get here usually.
Why do you drive like such a grandma?
Because I don't know how it is in fancy land, and it's maybe you're not getting as much snow, but it was basically a whiteout nightmare trying to get here for me.
Whiteout?
Yeah.
You couldn't see.
No.
It was perfect.
And because other idiots won't turn their effing lights on, I'm almost smashing into them at red lights.
Your boy, you are a set. You are another. This is like the panic mode that goes into around here and a little bit of snow. Mass, how was your commute?
Piece of cake.
Golden.
I told you I did some texting and emailing on the way in.
I ate lunch. I had a bowl of stuffed peppers and cauliflower rice in my lap as I'm passing people on the Mass Pike. So, listen, all of you candy asses, you just do your panic thing about the snow and let the rest of us get on with our day. The Murray's one of them. They're panicked at the snow. Panicked. You came in here, like, all bent out of shape having to drive through a little bit of snow.
This isn't a little bit of snow.
It's a legitimate
blizzard.
So what?
You couldn't see anything, at least where I was.
So, folks.
And roads were closed. I couldn't get on Storrow Drive because Storrow Drive was closed, because God forbid they get out there and plow the effing thing, because there's so much effing snow.
So take North Beacon Street. Like, it's really
hard. Yeah, I know. I had to go all the way out of my way. It was a pain in the ass.
How far out of the way is that? It's a couple blocks.
Yeah, it was longer. It was a lot longer. I just want to be somewhere where it never snows. Bring up, please, where's the global warming? I keep hearing about it. Can we have it, please?
It's called climate change.
Can we get the tax to it?
You need better wipers, Mario. That's what you need.
I used my friend's Jeep. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been able to get here.
So listen, this is for the people out there.
You get a whiteout you couldn't see?
For the people out there. Listen. Go slow, but not too slow. If you have to go too slow.
So this is the other thing. Now you're going to ride my ass because I decided to go real slow.
Yes. If you are afraid like Murray or don't know how to drive, and if you don't know who I'm talking about, let me tell you. I'm talking about you. You. Let's face it. 99.9% of the people don't know how to drive. They can't drive. So I'm talking to you. So if you're afraid or you can't drive or you don't have the right rig, you don't have the right car for it, just stay home. If you're going to be on the roads, you've got to drive a little bit. You can't just go 5 miles an hour because there are people who do have to be somewhere. And I'm not talking about talk show hosts. I'm talking about essential personnel, people who've got to clean the streets and the plow trucks and all of that nature. So
I love the guys with the sidewalk things, those little bobcats you can drive on the sidewalk. Those things are awesome.
So there are some people who do have to be places. And then there are other people like us who are non-essential but still have to go to work. So when I say drive slow, be careful. But if you have to drive so slow that you're gumming everything up, don't drive. Stay home and watch, you know, the guys with the hits in the snowstorm, and just don't get in your stupid car because you can't drive it anyway. So just stay home. So that's my advice.
So this is spoken by someone who's clearly never been in a snow-related car accident, correct?
Right.
Yeah. Okay. See, then I've been in two. It's rather traumatizing. I'm dealing with the after effects of that. Maybe that's my issue here. But it sucks to drive in this when you expect the worst to happen.
Right. So you're scared. So don't drive.
Yeah,
don't drive.
But I also have a really good work ethic, and so I'm going to get here no matter what. Well, borderline. This from a guy during a commercial break. I can't believe the building is empty today. Of course the building's empty today, because people, if they had to come here, even salespeople, what are they going to do? They're going to be calling empty buildings because no one's there, because their bosses have told them, stay home. And if they are going to come here, like poor Kristen, who's still here, they're going to be worried about how the hell they're getting home the whole time.
She's afraid. She's afraid to get in her car and drive home. She's like, it's okay, Kristen, it's okay. The car is built to go through the snow. You'll get through the snow. You'll make it. You may have to. Maybe they've closed a road, although, again, when you say closed, are they standing there with guns, like armed guards? Like, because if, just to say it's closed, you can, your car is still going to go through the snow. So you'll be okay. You'll make it, Kristen. You'll make it. But so I'm saying...
When the roads are closed, it's not a suggestion.
Well, no.
Street signs are a suggestion, Murray.
Sometimes they're a suggestion. Sometimes you're not getting in there. But just to say it's closed, just because it's snowy, I bet you can still drive through it. And if you can't, then you just turn around. There's no one on the street.
No, they have a Stadie parked in front of the exit.
Right. So, yeah. So then you're not getting in. That's closed.
Yes. It really comes down to me being a diva about being inconvenient.
You're being afraid.
I don't like being inconvenienced.
You're afraid. You've been a couple of fender benders, yeah, and now you're afraid.
Yeah. There's that, too.
So stay home.
Jim Mary. That is your new name. Jim Mary. Something about Murray.
I don't have enough to have the heated driveways that you have.
I don't have heated driveways.
I don't know if I believe and that.
Murray had a little lamb.
And there's a crap ton of snow where I live. A crap ton that was not shoveled today. And I just... Because you know what? The car is built to actually go through the snow. So take it easy. Be careful. But if you've got to be so slow, then I just say, why are you in your car in the
first
place?
Don't the plow trucks actually dump extra snow on your house because of your takes?
I think that's happened before. I do believe. Do we have that picture? Yeah, that's happened before.
This happened after Deflategate, I believe.
There was such a mound in front of my house that it could not have been an accident.
That was like the people who beeped in front of my house at 2 in the morning when the Yankees won the World Series.
All right, so we've done no snow talk. We're not going to, because you know it's snowing and everyone's doing snow talk. We're going to do what we usually do, which is just sit here and bark about sports, which we'll do in 90 seconds without any commercial interruption right after Murray's update.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.